This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show, and we have a new feature. It's called Dear John. You can go to our website, Bayou957.com, click on the Dear John icon, and you can ask me a question if you want some advice. You could make a statement. I mean, you could ask a question about your life, about our lives, about your situation, about the radio show, the radio station.
Please remember that John Osterling is not an attorney.
No, but yesterday I told a story about how I got to find some place to live because the apartment building I've been living in for the last 3 years in the warehouse district here in New Orleans, my apartment, which I absolutely love, we all were told we've got to get out because the building, the people that own the building say they can make more money if they just rent it out for vacation rentals, basically like Airbnb, that kind of thing. So I got to find a new place to live, and I was bummed out about that. And I asked you, did you ever get kicked out of a house for a reason that wasn't your fault and you had nothing to do with? Ashley clicked on the Dear John icon on our website. And she said she was living with her very young 6-month-old son, living in an apartment, paying rent. Problem is, when they paid the rent to the landlord was not paying the bank for the mortgage on that.
Oops.
And so they just, someone knocked on their door one day and kicked her and her 6-month-old out of their apartment. They were able to find another place to live. And I'm sure I'll be able to find another place to live, even though it's like around the holidays.
Hey, you, leave the jacket and get out.
And she said, that's the craziest way I ever had to move out of a place. Thank you, Ashley, for your response. And again, if you want to be a part of Dear John, we appreciate it. Just go to our website, Bayou957.com, click on the link, and ask us a question or make a statement about whatever you want.
Please remember that John Osterling is not a medical doctor.
Did you see this story about this female musician who's playing halftime of the Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving Day game? She's playing the halftime show. Her name is Ellie Goulding. She's really good looking. But now she's threatened to back out of her halftime performance during the Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving Day game because they're associated with the Salvation Army. And people have told her that the Salvation Army, because they're in with Christian organizations, that they're anti-LGBTQ. And so now, musician, she's a singer, Ellie...
It's Goulding.
Goulding.
Yeah.
She said, unless the Salvation Army makes a donation or a public statement about how they are pro-LGBTQ, she is going to back out and not perform at this year's Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving Day for the halftime show.
I predict she'll be told, bye, Felicia.
She's ripping the Salvation Army. The Salvation Army! They do God's work! Evidently, she got a bunch of complaints saying, look, the Cowboys are so tied in closely and tightly with the Salvation Army. Didn't you know that the Salvation Army, because they're Christian, they hate gays? And they're against LGBTQ people? So because she got messages like that, she said she's going to back out of her halftime performance. I mean, the Salvation Army, what an incredible organization they are. Do you know how many children and homeless people that they have helped house, feed, clothe, and she's ripping them because they're also rooted in Christian beliefs, and those Christian beliefs, according to the people who complained to Ellie Goulding, they're anti-LGBTQ. When the Salvation Army heard about this,
they nearly dropped their bells.
No, they said, slow down here. They said they don't care. They don't care about what anyone's sexuality, gender identity is. All they want to do is continue to help the people who need help. That's all the Salvation Army said about this. But now this singer is saying, come on, Salvation Army, either make a donation to an LGBTQ group or make a statement saying you're pro-LGBT. She's telling what the Salvation Army what to do. The Salvation Army has helped countless people for many, 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 many years. Isn't this something, how people's Christian beliefs are to other people, they're haters? Because they have Christian beliefs, that means they must be haters?
That's enough.
Boy, oh boy. She is easy on the eyes, though. Here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. And the New Orleans Saints showed us yesterday that last weekend was just a bad day as the Saints went to Tampa and took care of the Buccaneers. And it showed us that game a week ago Sunday here in the Superdome against the Atlanta Falcons was a bad day. Although, how about Atlanta? They went to Carolina and manhandled, absolutely destroyed the Carolina Panthers. But the New Orleans Saints are back on track. That's what matters most.
You know, a lot of people are championing the idea of adding a couple more games to the season.
There's going to be 17 games regular season, I think, either next year or the year after.
Atlanta's pushing for 18 games total this year, just because they're starting to catch fire here in late November.
Yeah.
They'd like to play until March.
But after yesterday, it's pretty obvious the Saints are back on top. Again, you look at the best teams in the NFL. The AFC, I think they only have two, maybe three teams, and that maybe third team is the Kansas City Chiefs with a healthy Patrick Mahomes. But I think there's only two or three teams, as we sit here this morning, that could win a Super Bowl in the AFC, and that would be the New England Patriots, the Baltimore Ravens, and maybe the Kansas City Chiefs. There are more teams in the NFC, in my opinion, that could win the Super Bowl this year. And I think the New Orleans Saints are leading the way, along with the Green Bay Packers. San Francisco 49ers, I know they only have one loss. They really haven't played anybody this year. They had a mini miracle come from behind win yesterday against a bad Arizona Cardinal team. So in the NFC, Saints, Packers, I'm still saying the Minnesota Vikings. Even though they didn't look great yesterday, they had a come from behind win. I still think they've got a good enough defense to compete. And
well, Cousins lit it up yesterday.
Yeah, and then you've got the Seattle Seahawks. I say because Russell Wilson right now is the most valuable player in the NFL, and I think as long as you got him, it's like Green Bay. As long as they have Aaron Rodgers, they have a shot. I'm just not sold on San Francisco yet. I'm just really, really, really. I mean, they've got a great defense, San Francisco, but Garoppolo gets better week after week. Look, there's still a lot of football to be played. I think there's a few more better teams in the NFC that have a chance of winning the Super Bowl than the AFC. But good stuff. And then so this week, those aforementioned Carolina Panthers, who've got a new quarterback, his name's Kyle Allen. Cam Newton will never play again in Carolina. His days are numbered there. They put him on injured reserve, meaning he won't play for the rest of this year. And then when the offseason comes, they're not going to pay him much money. He was losing before he got hurt. He was losing lots of games.
They're already selling his jerseys for like $10. And that's not, I don't mean like at the discount store. I don't mean like at Walmart there in Carolina. I'm talking about in the team shop, in the Carolina Panthers team shop, you can get those jerseys for $10. That's not, kind of a slap in the face.
Not the $10 general store?
No.
So this coming Sunday, Carolina comes here, and because it's a home game, that means this week we will be giving away tickets. It's the Osterlin Saints home game handoff. We'll be giving away tickets to that game on Thursday. Looking forward to that. And the tickets go to that game, and what goes along with those tickets are also two tickets to go to a pregame party next door at Benson Tower. There's all the free food and all the free booze. Good stuff. So we'll be giving those tickets away on Thursday. And one other thing to do with the NFL, Colin Kaepernick. He said that this was, by the way, the NFL got behind this past Saturday for Colin Kaepernick to work out. And they, before it was all said and done on Saturday afternoon, I think they had 25 NFL teams, 25 out of the 32, to show up in Atlanta to watch Colin Kaepernick work out. And this was sponsored by the NFL. That's right, the league that he sued and the league that paid him millions of dollars in a lawsuit decided to get behind him, I guess because they're trying to be justified socially. And then about an hour before the workout, Colin Kaepernick was put out a message saying, I'm about an hour away from where the NFL and their teams want me to work out. He says, I'm not going to work out for them. I'm going to work out in suburban Atlanta, and I'm going to do it on my terms. And so I think about nine teams showed up
right
to where he worked out. And I think
stunt.
I think Saturday he just proved he didn't really want to play in the NFL anymore anyways. I mean, imagine a place where you used to work, setting something up for you to come back. A place not only that you used to work, but you sued for millions of dollars, and that paid you millions of dollars. The NFL then put their tails between their legs and said, okay, Colin Kaepernick, we will get behind this workout for you. And then he basically gives them a finger about an hour before, saying no. And I think it just proved that he doesn't want to play in the NFL anymore. And I hope Colin Kaepernick can change the world. I hope Colin Kaepernick goes and fixes all, or at least tries to fix the problems that he sees that are in this country. But please just stay out of the NFL. Stay away from the NFL. Just don't go near the NFL anymore. Please. I mean, I really like the NFL. And for a little while, Colin Kaepernick was a real good quarterback. But then he started losing, and then he started stinking. And then he started losing game after game after game after game. And then he started kneeling during the national anthem to protest the problems in this country between police officers and black men. So, but he had already started losing games. And just go back and look at his record and his statistics. They all speak for themselves. He was losing before he started kneeling. He was not that same quarterback that led his team to a Super Bowl and almost won here in New Orleans against the Baltimore Ravens. So, and a good weekend for LSU, even though it wasn't a great weekend. LSU is number one in every poll in America. I think the only question with LSU this year, believe it or not, is their defense. I don't think they have an elite defense, and that's what could hurt them once the college football playoff starts, or once they play, who's it going to be, Georgia, in the SEC championship game. I think their defense is the only thing that can hurt them. And it's not going to be their offense, and how strange does that sound? That the LSU Tigers are being carried in Baton Rouge by their quarterback, who's going to win the Heisman Trophy this year, Heisman Joe Burrow. And it's if they don't win the national championship, it's probably going to be because of their defense. But we expect them to win the national championship this
year.
So.
Bad news on something that didn't really look that bad, and that is the injury to Tua. Although when those two linemen came down on him with the full weight of their bodies, you've seen uglier incidents happen I mean, you thought that that wasn't going to be, I mean, that's not the worst I've ever seen, but.
Well, Tua, the Alabama quarterback, will not be playing any more football this year. His hip was dislocated. Same exact injury they're saying that Bo Jackson had.
Mm-hmm. And you see what happened to him.
Yeah, that's not good. And that's sad for that kid. I mean, you're talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars. I mean, if he can't play football, what the hell can he do? He went to Alabama, for God's sake. I mean, what the hell can he do if he can't play football?
Teacher? No, not so much.
All right, coming up on the show, we had a gubernatorial election over the weekend here in Louisiana. And believe it or not, a Democrat, sure, a pro-life, a pro-gun Democrat. He's still a Democrat, and he won in a very, very, very red place, surprising some people. Stay tuned for that. Coming up here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans only classic rock. So Saturday was election day, runoff day and night here in Louisiana. And our governor, John Taco Bell Edwards, wins. The incumbent wins another 4 years. He is a Democrat in an extremely Republican state, an extremely red state. But he is a pro-life. He's not down with abortion, like most other Democrats are. And he is a pro-Second Amendment, a pro-gun, unlike many other Democrats. He is a pro-Second Amendment Democrat. And so he ended up winning. And, you know, if you look, it's incredible. Here in New Orleans, where about 400,000 people live, he got 105,000 votes. His opponent, Republican Eddie Rasponi, here in New Orleans, in Orleans Parish, only got 11,000 votes. I mean, think about that. 400,000 people live here, and only 11,000 voted for the Republican.
Apparently, the African American voter turnout was really, really good.
And it had to be for John Taco Bell Edwards to win another 4 years. And so it was because of New Orleans and also East Baton Rouge Parish as well. But Edwards also beat, I mean, the Democrat Edwards beat the Republican Rasponi in Jefferson Parish as well. Beat him 72,000 votes to 54,000 votes. So, and then up in St. Tammany Parish, they have a new parish president as Pat Brister got beat by the former mayor of Covington, Mike Cooper. Mike Cooper is the new president in St. Tammany Parish. And their police chief, their sheriff, won again in St. Tammany Parish. The controversial Randy Smith. Boy, I know some people on Facebook that hate that guy. They think he is a drunken bum. But he wins again to be sheriff of St. Tammany Parish. So election day came and went on Saturday. Some people were a little bit surprised because the president, Donald Trump, came down here to stump for Eddie Rasponi, who was running against John Taco Bell Edwards, but it didn't work. I got to be honest with you. I follow politics. I never even heard of Eddie Rasponi until last month when we had our first election. Never even heard of Eddie Rasponi before. I couldn't tell you who he was, couldn't tell you what he did. I had no idea. And so we have John Taco Bell Edwards again for another 4 years here in the state of Louisiana. Pretty amazing that a Democrat can win in such a red state, but we told you he's a unique Democrat. He's not like most other Democrats.
Yo quiero Taco Bell.
Let me told you why. All right. Coming up on the show, boy, we got a story about a teacher who just got arrested for fighting with a student. I don't remember when I was in school fighting with teachers. Stay tuned for that coming up here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. And one of my favorite shows in recent history was Breaking Bad. I really liked that show. It was a well-written show. The casting was great. But you knew, if you enjoyed that show like me, you knew at some point life would imitate art. And sure enough, it just did. Two Arkansas chemistry professors arrested for making methamphetamine. Bitch. Two chemistry professors in the state of Arkansas were arrested on Friday for making methamphetamine. Terry David Bateman and Bradley Allen Rowland, both associate chemistry professors at Henderson State University.
Not Pinkman, but Bateman.
Yeah. And by the way, that university, I've never heard of it, Henderson State University. Is their football team any good?
I think it's Division VI, isn't it?
That's in Arkadelphia, Arkansas.
Mm.
Sounds like there's a town where methamphetamine is much more prevalent than football.
You think?
They were taken into custody by Clark County, Arkansas. Deputies?
Everything in the story is like, walks right up to the edge, walks right up to the line. It's not Pinkman, it's Bateman. And it's not Clark County, Nevada, where Vegas is. Isn't this an ironic?
A little bit. Yeah, one of the teachers is 45, the other is 40 years old.
When you said Clark County, I thought this was somehow moved to Las Vegas.
Out there in Nevada. They were charged with manufacturing methamphetamine and using drug paraphernalia. This is exactly like the television show Breaking Bad.
Pretty close.
With their high school chemistry teacher, Walter White. These guys taught chemistry at Henderson State University in Arkadelphia, Arkansas. I don't think that place is going to get confused with Harvard or Yale. Evidently, only one of those two professors had enough cash to bond out. I guess they tried bonding out with meth. They said, look, we got plenty of this stuff. But they said, no, you can't use that to bond out. You need actual cash.
That's some story.
That is some story. These people thinking that, hey, like, I got this great idea from a television show. The problem was, on campus, the university's science center had a shutdown for a day recently due to a report of an undetermined chemical odor. So these idiots, they didn't do what Walter White and Jesse Pinkman did. They, because Walter and Jesse, they were in the middle of nowhere when they were making their meth. They were hidden away pretty well, and nobody was going to figure out what they were doing. But these two idiots, these two Arkansas college professors, they decided to try to cook the meth, make the meth right there on campus.
Right.
In Arkadelphia, Arkansas.
You're not going to believe this. This is 100% true. This is not a goof. This is not accentuating the bit. That is a Title I school, that being Arkadelphia High School. Apparently, they do have athletics. Their team mascot is the Badger. Bitch!
How about that?
Badger!
It makes you wonder how much of this they actually made and sold.
I'm wondering
before
how much
they got caught.
Well, I'm wondering how much of this you made up. But it's all right here. Absolutely. It's not made up.
This is all true.
Yes, it's 100% true. The Badgers.
But I got to be honest with you. I would believe the story about the two chemistry professors at this small college in Arkadelphia, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. I would believe that before I would believe that there's a town called Arkadelphia, Arkansas.
I think there's an Arkadelphia, either Mississippi or Alabama, if not both. And those of you who are etymologists and know your word derivations, that's, is it Greek for something?
I'm surprised this
like,
is...
Like Delphia, like the Oracle at Delphi in there somewhere.
I'm surprised that this is the first we're hearing, unless I miss stories, of chemistry professors, chemistry teachers copying what happened in the great television show Breaking Bad.
Right.
I'm surprised we haven't read about more of them, because they're smart guys. They know how to make it, and not only do they know how to make it, they could probably make as good a stuff as could possibly be made. I'm surprised these are the only couple that I've read about so far.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't New Mexico or it wasn't Nevada. It was Arkadelphia, Arkansas.
Home of the Badgers.
Bitch. How about that?
One more. I have one more little tidbit to add to the end of this. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, we wrapped up the month-long celebration that is Mrs. Brewster's birthday. And her favorite place to go, we go every year with Mrs. Brewster's mother and myself, and we go to Clancy's. Mrs. Brewster loves Clancy's, and as we're walking out, would you like to know who was standing at the maitre d' table, ready to be seated?
Who?
Bryan Cranston, my hand to God.
Hey, the actor who played the great Walter White.
There you go. Apparently, I looked it up. Well, no, I actually looked it up, but apparently, he's in town filming a 10-part... Showtime drama, like a courtroom drama or I forget exactly what he said it was, but set here in New Orleans. And my hand to God, I was standing closer than you and I are right now.
Did you ask
Bryan
him for a picture?
Cranston. No, I'm not that guy. It's just,
see, if he was sitting eating dinner, I wouldn't have asked him.
No,
but if he was at the maitre d', if he was in the lobby of the maitre d', I would have said, hey, Walter, can I get a quick shot with you?
No, I wouldn't have called him Walter, number one. I would have said, hey, aren't you Tim Watley, the dentist?
That's right.
Can you take a look at this? I got like a hole in his tooth. But no, I'm not that guy.
From Seinfeld. That's
yes.
Right. Yeah, there you go. I thought you were going to say to wrap up her birthday, your Mrs. Brewster. I thought you were going to start telling us a story about meth or something. Jesus, I'm glad it was just meeting the actor who played Walter White.
Yeah, no meth at Clancy's. No, they frown on that.
And Breaking Bad here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. So on this show earlier this year, in the beginning of the summer, actually, spring and summertime, we talked several times about the guy who was making history on the television show Jeopardy, a guy by the name of James Holzhauer. He was back the last week for the tournament.
Last couple of weeks. Yeah.
The last couple of weeks for the Jeopardy Tournament of Champions.
Spoiler alert coming, if you don't want to know, just go la 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 for a minute or two.
I don't think it's very shocking.
No.
I mean, he won the second most amount of money in the history of the television show. He won the Tournament of Champions. And every year they do the Tournament of Champions on Jeopardy. They take the biggest winners that they have that particular year, and then they'll have a Tournament of Champions. And it came down to last, the Tournament of Champions always is a two-day event with the three people. And the other two people who were in it with him was the 27-year-old woman who beat him. Her name, Emma Botcher.
Betcher.
Emma Betcher. She's a librarian from Chicago. And she beat James Holzhauer, who's a professional gambler. Who lives in Las Vegas,
right?
Which was kind of shocking because you don't think professional gamblers are brilliant minds like James Holzhauer has. That's not something that you think of when you first think of a professional.
Well, if he's a card gambler. a card counter, then you have to have that ability for storage and recall. It sounded like this on Friday.
A dispute over Itorofu, Habomai, Kunashiri, and Shikotan has kept these two countries from ever signing a World War II peace treaty.
I'm going to take a World War II. I'm going to take...
I watched that. I didn't get it.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. Japan and... dispute over, I don't know, Japan and... I don't know.
It's not right.
We come to James. He was in second place today going into final. Did he come up with Japan and Russia? He did indeed.
Oh, Japan.
And that gives you a two-day total of
76,923.
Over to Emma, looking for Japan and Russia. Finding Japan and Russia, giving you a two-day total of 65,000. James Holzhauer, congratulations. You've just won $250,000. Enjoy the moment.
$250,000 for winning the Tournament of Champions is nothing compared to what he won, because he had won about $2.5 million when he had his run.
And he donated a good bit of that to charity, I believe.
Yeah. And Alex Trebek has asked him, since you won the about $2.5 million on Jeopardy, have you calmed down your professional gambling? Do you bet less? And James Holzhauer said, oh, no. Oh, no. And so now his total winnings, including the Tournament of Champions, over $2.7 million. That's the third highest in the history of the television show Jeopardy, trailing only Ken Jennings, who won $3.37 million, and some guy named Brad Rutter, who won $4.688 million. So Ken Jennings is second, James Holzhauer is third, and a guy named Brad Rutter has won the most money in Jeopardy history. Coming up next, we look at today in history. We call the segment Why Today Doesn't Suck. Suck is next on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. It's time for us to look at today in history. And on this show, we call the segment
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
November 18th. It was today in 1995.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
The Rolling Stones become the very first band to webcast one of their concerts over the internet. And that happened today in 1995. The internet in 1995 was still...
I was still using Windows 3.1.
Yeah, and I bet you a lot of people, they still heard the sounds of their phone. When they were trying to get onto the internet and things all of that stuff.
Right. External modems.
How about that? Out of all the bands, though, I mean, that's a good trivia question.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all the bands that are out there, you wouldn't think, money wouldn't be on the Rolling Stones being the first band to webcast one of their concerts over the internet.
Right.
They're old.
When you heard the word webcast and then the year 1995, those... Or when you heard the, if you were to guess the year, the question were to be, who was it and the year, webcast, you wouldn't think to go back as far as 1995, or at least I wouldn't.
November 18th, 2 years before that, today in 1993.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
It was the day Nirvana recorded their MTV Unplugged special at Sony Studios in Brooklyn, New York. And that ended up being historic.
Right. And that made pale green cardigan sweaters fly off the store shelves like there was no tomorrow.
Yeah, and then what, all of these years later, we just talked about it, about a month ago, if that, how that particular green cardigan that he was wearing, that dirty thing, just sold at an auction for piles of money, over $300,000.
Now, if you were a collector of such items, I think that's a good question. If you were to collect something like that, would you have it cleaned?
They say you shouldn't.
You shouldn't. You should just keep it intact as it is.
I think it still kind of smells. It's got cigarette burns in
gross.
It. But that's what he wore.
Right. I guess you would just put that in glass and keep it as it was.
Speaking of selling memorabilia, it was November 18th, today in 1990.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
At a rock memorabilia auction, Paul McCartney's birth certificate sold for, take a guess what someone would pay in 1990 for Paul McCartney's birth certificate.
The actual birth certificate?
That's what it says here. Doesn't he need it?
Sounds like somebody broke into records in Liverpool. $100,000.
Nah, $18,000.
Well. See, I'm jaded as far as memorabilia goes. Now, would you wash that? If you got a hold of his real birth certificate, would you wash it?
I don't think you need to wash that one.
No.
And finally, it was today in 1990.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
Mick Jagger married model actress Jerry Hall in Indonesia.
Hmm.
I have a question.
What year?
That was today in 1990. Hmm. They've since divorced.
Sure.
And he has a bevy of models and actresses and a bevy of children, grandchildren, and
right.
Kinds of that. But they got married today in 1990. I have a question.
Okay.
If two Americans get married in Indonesia, because she was American, obviously he's not.
Mm-hmm. She's from Texas.
Yes. But if two Americans get married in Indonesia, is it legal?
What's your question? I don't.
Yeah, does that piece of paper mean the same exact thing as a piece of paper from the United States of America and saying you got married?
And a follow up question: if you had that piece of paper, would you wash it?
Hmm.
Happy birthday today to Kirk Hammett from Metallica.
Great guitar player. Nobody ever talks about him when they talk about the great guitar players.
Hmm.
But you talk about a guy, there's nothing he can't do on a guitar.
You can shred with the best of them.
Kirk Hammett's something else.
And
that's a segment that we call
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
Coming up on the show, a guy uptown here in New Orleans was shot over the weekend. But that's not news because that happens all the time. But it's what he got shot with that is making news. And he's talking about it. Stay tuned for that report coming up here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. Feels good on a Monday morning during football season when you wake up and both the Saints and LSU have won over the weekend and they both remain at the top of where they are. And more on them coming up on the show. But the Saints yesterday, they showed us that last week was just a bad day. Again, more on that coming up soon. So I saw the other night a guy uptown New Orleans got shot. And normally that's not really news because here in New Orleans, people get shot all the time. But it's what this guy was shot with. That's why I'm bringing it up this morning on the show. Man shot and knocked unconscious in random paintball attack. Guy was shot with a paintball. His name, David Stitcher. And he went to a show last week at Tipitina's. It's my old neighborhood up there. Right? When I lived uptown, I didn't live far from there. And that's a pretty good neighborhood. I like that neighborhood. And he was walking home from a show at Tipitina's about 2:30 in the morning. He said, quote, I decided to take St. Charles Avenue instead of Britannia because I just felt like, for whatever reason, that would be the safest route. So he's walking on St. Charles Avenue past General Pershing Street when he sensed something behind him. Quote, they started shooting me, and then I got knocked unconscious, and I woke up a little bit down the street. And then the person from Fox 8 who he's telling the story to, he then lifted up his shirt, and he saw that he had paint all over his body. He said he heard the popping sounds of a gun. I mean, that must be so scary. You had a fun night at Tipitina's. You're rocking out. And then you're walking home in a decent, a good neighborhood here in the city of New Orleans. And all of a sudden, he heard 12 to 15 shots. If you're walking in New Orleans and you start hearing shots like that, the first thing that goes through your mind is not paintball. Those aren't the first things that I bet went through his mind. He took a number of hits to his side, shoulder, and his leg, and a paintball hit him right in the temple, and it rendered him unconscious. He said, quote, "It took me a second to really realize what just happened." And I was like, "Oh, my God, I just got shot." Luckily, it wasn't lead. It was only paint. And he was able enough when he became conscious again to walk right to a nearby hospital up there, uptown. And he got himself checked out, and he's doing all right. Who drives around New Orleans at 2 or 2:30 in the morning shooting people with paintball guns? As if we don't have enough of an issue with people getting shot in this city with real guns. You've got some people now that are driving around that are thinking this is some kind of fun. I mean, I guess this is a good shooting story because no one died, and he was able to get himself to the hospital, and he was shot with paint pellets. And have you ever played paintball? I used to play when I was younger.
I have not.
We used to go in the woods, and we would play paintball. And we'd set up on the field. We'd tie a flag. And when I say a flag, not an American flag, but we would just tie something that looked like a flag on one end of a field, and then on another end of a field. And then the goal of the game was you had to go to the other end of the field, get the flag, and then run it all the way back to your side of the field.
Right.
But there were lots of trees, and there were lots of rocks, and there were places you could hide. You know, paintball is a very fun game. It's not very much fun when you're walking in the streets of New Orleans at 2 or 2:30 in the morning.
Right. I have a paintball game that I play on PlayStation 4. Not much moving around. I don't get winded.
And I don't think that the paint pellets hurt as much.
No, not at all.
When they strike you, but I'm glad that this guy's okay. But what kind of lunatics? When we have enough crazy criminals running around the city of New Orleans shooting people pretty much every day and every night, the last thing we need are people driving around with paintball guns looking for people to pick off. All right, coming up next on the show, yeah, a good weekend for the Saints and LSU. I'm still a bit concerned about LSU's defense, though, surprisingly. And, some people are saying that the incumbent governor, John Taco Bell Edwards, who won 4 more years on Saturday night, on election night, some are saying his close relationship with LSU football coach Ed Orgeron is one of the reasons that he may have won, that got him over the hump. We'll explain coming up here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7. The classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. And it was election day on Saturday over the weekend, and our governor, John Taco Bell Edwards, ended up winning again. The incumbent won another 4 years. And so that's pretty amazing because he's a Democrat. And although he's not a Democrat like most of the other Democrats in the United States, he's a pro-life Democrat, meaning he's not down with abortion, like most other Democrats are, and he's a pro-Second Amendment, a pro-gun Democrat, unlike most other Democrats in the United States of America. And that's the only way in an extremely red state like Louisiana, a Democrat is gonna have a chance to win a statewide election. And he won big in New Orleans, in Orleans Parish. He won big in East Baton Rouge Parish. He actually even won in Jefferson Parish, which was a bit of a surprise. And has he done a decent job? Some would tell you yes. People that don't like him will tell you no. My biggest question was, who is Eddie Rasponi? As someone who's lived in New Orleans now almost 12 years, and I keep an eye on politics, until he threw his name in to run for governor, I didn't know who Eddie Rasponi was. I never heard the name Eddie Rasponi before in my life, before this. But it was very close. The election was John Taco Bell Edwards beat Eddie Rasponi by 40,000 votes. It's 51% to 49% in our state. 40,000 votes isn't that many. And some are saying that Governor Edwards' relationship with LSU coach Ed Orgeron might have put him over the top, might have had something to do. LSU's win over Alabama two Saturdays ago, and LSU coaches Ed Orgeron's relationship with John Edwards, because he likes John Edwards, and he ended up saying some good and some nice things about him. And some people are saying now that relationship between the governor fighting for a second term and the head football coach at LSU, who's got them ranked number one in every poll, they're higher ranked now than they've been in recent history, that Ed Orgeron endorsing Governor Edwards was one of the big reasons that put him over the top. He said of John Edwards, "I know the state of Louisiana believes in him just like a championship quarterback." And John Edwards was hanging around the LSU football team because of his relationship with his coach. Look, if you don't like John Edwards, that's smart politics. He knows where people's hearts are, and for him to hang around there and then get that endorsement from a very, very popular LSU football coach, that went a long way. And again, when you look at 40,000 votes was the difference between the two candidates in a 51% to 49% battle when it came to being governor of Louisiana, that could have been something that did help push him over the top. And one other thing over the weekend, obviously the New Orleans Saints, a big win, especially after what happened 8 days ago here in the Superdome. Yesterday in Tampa, the New Orleans Saints showed us, and they showed everybody, that what happened last week was just a bad day, and it happens. And the Saints look good, and now they come home this week for the Carolina Panthers, who looked awful against the Atlanta Falcons. That's 2 weeks in a row that the Atlanta Falcons, starting 2 weeks ago, they were 1-7. They came in here and they whooped the Saints. And then yesterday they went into Charlotte, North Carolina, and they whooped the Carolina Panthers. All of a sudden, the Atlanta Falcons have woken up. And I need, if I'm talking about the Saints division, the NFC South, I need to throw in the Colin Kaepernick story as well, because you're not going to get worse quarterback play than you got out of Jameis Winston from Tampa Bay and Kyle Allen, the guy who's replaced Cam Newton. By the way, Cam Newton's finished in Carolina. He's never gonna play another game for them. Look for him to go to a place like Denver or Chicago. But he's finished playing with the Carolina Panthers. They put him on injured reserve this year, which means he's done for the season anyways, and they're not gonna bring him back. But Colin Kaepernick, there are people saying he could have started yesterday for Tampa. He could have started yesterday for Carolina, because their quarterbacks played so bad. They were pathetic. And they're not the only teams in the NFL that have pathetic quarterback play. That Colin Kaepernick, there are some people that say he should be playing somewhere. But did you see what he did on Saturday? He had the NFL, again, a league who he sued, and they wrote him a check for millions and millions of dollars. He sued that league, and then that league goes and kowtows to him. They set up a workout for him that he can work out in front of a bunch of their teams, general managers, head coaches, assistant coaches. And before this happened on Saturday, this was going to be in Atlanta, there were 25 out of the 32 NFL teams who said they were in. They were gonna go to this. And the Saints were not one of them, by the way.
Which was a pretty good number, because when we left here on Friday, I believe 10 had announced that they would have a representation there, like a scout or whoever goes.
In between 10 a.m. Friday morning and then Saturday afternoon, a bunch more teams said they were going to send a representative to go watch Colin Kaepernick work out. But then, before this was going to happen, and I still don't know why the NFL did this, he already sued you. He already sued, and you already wrote him a check for millions of dollars. So you still feel you got to put your tail between your leg and go sponsor a workout for a bunch of your teams, 25 of your NFL teams? Well, about an hour before he was supposed to start his workout, he sent a message through social media saying, you know, I'm outside of Atlanta. I'm still going to work out, but I'm not going to work out where the NFL wants me to work out. So, again, this is a league that he sued for millions of dollars and they paid him. They then go, you try doing that with your company, whoever you work for. Sue them and then see if they will throw you some sort of a party that you can audition to get back into that company. But Colin Kaepernick ended up working out about an hour outside of Atlanta in front of eight or nine teams. And he wore a T-shirt that said Kunta Kinte, and, you know, obviously from the movie Roots. And look, if you know the Colin Kaepernick story, he started playing really bad before he took a knee. His statistics were horrible. He was losing games, much like Cam Newton in Carolina. And then he decided to take the knee during the national anthem to protest the way black men get treated by police officers here in America. But then what he do on Saturday, did that tell you that he is really heartfelt and honest about wanting to come back and playing in the NFL? He had 25 teams ready to watch him.
Right.
Again, the Saints, not one of them.
And again,
Saints have three quarterbacks.
None of those teams, actually, I don't believe, had any legitimate thoughts that they're actually going to see something that they can use.
Then why'd they show up? To be politically correct?
Exactly. It's when they go down the list and say, well, who was there, who was not here? Oh, well, pick a team, whoever. I was there. Yeah, we were there. We sent somebody. It's just so that, okay, well, they're fine. They can be checked off the list. It's just what we talked about with the Chicago Cubs and the gesture that was made behind the African American reporter. You've got to get out in front of these things.
The okay gesture, which we later learned after that, was a symbol of hate.
Right. If you take the okay gesture and you somehow get a W and a P out of that, it's just now we've gotten to the point where you have to not only get out in front of something, you've got to really get out in front of something. And it's like, oh, we were there for Kaepernick's workout. We were there.
But how can anybody take him serious after what he did this past Saturday?
No, he doesn't want to play. I don't know what he wants, but it's he's done.
Again, I love the NFL. And at this point, you know, if Colin Kaepernick wants to try to change the world, hey, buddy, go ahead. Go knock yourself out. Do what you want. Just stay away from the NFL. I love the NFL. And I think the NFL was getting played by Colin Kaepernick. And the fact is that he pulled what he pulled on Saturday. And again, look at his numbers. Look at his statistics. Look at how he played before he started kneeling. And it wasn't good. And I think the kneeling actually kind of diverted people's attention away from his game going so downhill.
Don't be surprised, though, if this latest stunt on Saturday doesn't lead to him wanting additional money from the NFL.
Oh, the NFL.
My prediction.
They already paid him.
Don't be surprised if this doesn't lead to going back to the well, put it that way.
He already sued them. They paid him millions of dollars, and then he played them one more time here in Atlanta, And they tried sucking up to him again, and he played him. He played him.
Mark my words.
Here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. Just listening to Poison, you hear the rumors about the big tour that could happen next year in 2020? Poison, Motley Crue, and Def Leppard. Obviously, Motley Crue and Def Leppard, bigger than Poison. Poison would probably open. But there are rumors going around right now that that could happen. And that could be a stadium tour. You think that would hit the dome, the Superdome here? And how do you think it would do if it came to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome? Looking at the bands, I think Def Leppard's in pretty decent shape. Poison, those chicks still look okay. But Motley Crue, I mean, Mick Mars has always been much older than the rest of them. And I hear that guy is in all kinds of pain all the time. I don't know if he... And have you seen Vince Neil lately? The singer of Motley Crue? He's a mess. But boy, wouldn't that be something? You know, and it just makes you start thinking about those days, you know, the back in the 80s when all of those guys, when they all, you know, looked great, played great. And now here we are in 2020, and they're talking about a Def Leppard and Motley Crue and Poison stadium tour. Stay tuned. The big rumor, it looks like it's going to happen.
We might break into programming for that. I say that facetiously often, but that's a case where we might.
Stay tuned. Coming up next on the show, a daycare worker just got fired for fat shaming a 5-year-old. We'll explain coming up here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. Saw this story late last week, and we didn't have time to get to it on our show. But this is one of those stories that makes you scratch your head and say, are we ever safe? This guy went to a bank in Maryland, and he made a large withdrawal. And then he went home. And not long after he got home, he was robbed of all of that money that he just withdrew from the bank. They robbed him right there at his home. And it made him wonder, how did anybody know that I had all of this money in my house that I just withdrew from my bank account? Well, it was an inside job. The bank teller who did his transaction earlier that day. The bank teller. This happened in a town called Bel Air, Maryland. And the bank teller who did the man's transaction, he counted out all of his money and said, here you go, you want to withdraw all this money? Because that's what people do when they go to banks sometimes. But then the bank teller left the bank not that long after that, and then went right to the man's house and tried robbing him.
Well, it's easier than going, you know, door to door to find people who have large sums of cash on them.
The poor guy was 78 years old. And he was robbed by the 19-year-old who was working at the bank. 19-year-old Nathan Newell was charged. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
I don't think I've ever seen a 19-year-old bank teller that I know of.
That's a good point.
You got to start somewhere, though.
You know, we see robberies all the time, but I don't think I've ever seen a story where a bank teller, someone who worked at a bank, saw that this 78-year-old man just withdrew a lot of money and then said, you know what, I'm going to go, I know where he lives because I work at the bank here and we have all of his information right here. I'm going to go to his house. As a matter of fact, the sheriff there in Bel Air, Maryland, said that... quote, in 34 years in law enforcement, I can't think of another case where it's almost like a reverse bank robbery.
Well, guess what, Sheriff? You're now going to start seeing dozens of them all over the country.
Oh, and you know, every we talk about a lot of different stories on this show, and every once in a while, I'll say, you know, I've been doing radio most of my adult life, a long time, and just when I thought that I've seen it all, that there's not a story that could pop up in front of my eyes I haven't seen that before.
I recall that happened last week, but I don't know what the story was.
Yeah, this 19-year-old Nathan Newell, bank teller, he forced his way inside the 78-year-old man's home, but another person inside that home was able to intervene during that robbery, the home invasion, and the 19-year-old bank teller just took off right before deputies arrived, but he was seen on the doorbell camera, and that helped detectives make the arrest. And he was arrested late last week, and of course, the bank that he used to work for is fully cooperating with the investigation. Again, we all use banks. This is something that could happen to anybody, anywhere. It's just happened up there. And I wonder how many times before, I wonder if we've seen anything like this before. I mean, you got people working at banks, and they're taking care of their customers' transactions, and this transaction happened to be very large, and the bank teller, and you know what, excuse me, I'm going to take a long lunch today. You know, I'm going to go.
Are we to assume that the 19-year-old teller, who then went to the man's house, and apparently there was an attack involved, because I'm seeing that he had a broken leg, the 78-year-old man, and was treated for injuries and bruises near his eye, and then suffered heart issues after this.
Yeah, there was someone else in the house,
right,
luckily, with the 78-year-old man.
Maybe a caretaker or...
who helped fend off the 19-year-old Nathan Newell.
Right.
And but not before Nathan Newell was able to really do some damage to this guy.
It doesn't say whether or not Nathan Newell was that particular bank customer, the 78-year-old man, whether or not they were face-to-face, whether Nathan Newell did the transaction. He could have been one bank teller window over or on a break or just listened in. Or
he was just working at the bank, and he knew this 78-year-old
somehow,
man just
right.
withdrew several thousand dollars,
right.
Many thousands of dollars, and he put a mark on him. Not even safe in the bank, in some banks.
He looks like they have his mugshot here from the his mugshot, and it's not quite what do you want from me. He looks like a fired camp counselor. That's what I see. Very ungroomed beard, very unkempt hair. 19-year-old bank teller.
Yeah, how many of those do you see?
I don't know.
Maybe
none that look like this.
Maybe this is the reason why.
Maybe we'll get that mugshot up on the website.
It doesn't matter where you're at. It does not matter. Always be careful out there.
Yes.
Coming up next on the show, we're going to tell you about this daycare worker that just lost their job because they fat-shamed a 5-year-old. Really? You can't find anybody around your own age or in your own family to fat shame. You got to go do that to a 5-year-old. We're going to hear the details on this coming up here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans only classic rock. So a daycare worker in Texas just lost their job because that particular daycare worker fat shamed a 5-year-old. Last week, the 5-year-old came to school, and the 5-year-old had a lunchbox. And the lunchbox had a couple of notes in there. And the 5-year-old's mother, and again, the 5-year-old is, he's fat, you could say, overweight.
How about Husky? I was always called. I was called Husky. I hated that. Hated that word.
Are you even allowed to call anybody fat anymore?
I don't think they even have. If you go by young boys' clothes, I don't think they can even have the word Husky in the store.
But because her 5-year-old child is large, the mother wrote a note. "Quote: I wrote this note just so at lunchtime he would have something that would make him happy. And to let him know that I am thinking about him." She said, here's what the note said.
It said lard, L-A-R-D.
It said, "We have been working with my son on his eating. He's extremely picky." I'm just throwing this part in right here, although you'd never know it. But he's extremely picky. "I have been introducing new healthy options in his lunchbox and discussed the changes with his school."
And he picks them out of his lunchbox and throws them away.
"And for the record, I feel that my son is perfect the way he is. I'm just helping him make healthier choices." And she wrote in the note, quote, "Please tell my son that his mommy loves him so much and I'm thinking about him. And I wanted that note to be put in my lunchbox, in my son's lunchbox." Mm-hmm. But later that day, last week, when her son returned home from school, the mother looked in the lunchbox and she found that somebody had written on the same note that she wrote.
Right. It said, "Dear Fatty's mother."
Fat shaming her son. It was just one sentence. It said, "No, put him on a diet and go away." You know, they've always said...
Boy, school's gotten a lot harsher since I went.
That, you know, cliches are cliches because there's a reason why they're cliches.
Well, and there's always a speck of truth.
The truth hurts.
Right.
That's a cliche.
Yes.
And the mother here just couldn't believe what the person at the school wrote. And so she obviously contacted the school. They found out who wrote it, and that person lost their job.
Can you imagine, though? I mean, we're assuming it's the teacher who wrote that on the child's note, right?
Someone in the school.
Okay. Wakes up in the morning and has, who peed in their cornflakes that they decide they're going to write on a 5-year-old's note? And send it back, saying, "No, put your fat kid on a diet."
There was a time in our country, and it wasn't that long ago, where saying something like this, "Look, your child is overweight. Put him on a diet and go."
Well, but that's,
where that would be constructive criticism. Not now, it's fat shaming.
But now, but you're missing the context, though. It's a note in a 5-year-old's lunchbox.
And the child is 5.
Yeah, it's come on, 5. That's something that is designed by the parent to maybe make the poor fat little bastard's life better, you know, throughout the day. And then to have the note absconded and then have the teacher write that nastiness on it. You know, I predict a long, hard life for this kid.
Well, at least the mother's trying.
Yeah, the mother tried. The teacher's not really too helpful. Do you understand my point? A note designed for the kid, right?
Well, the note was designed, well, the mother wrote the note for the kid.
Right.
The note that was written by someone at the school, the
right.
daycare, that was written, obviously,
by somebody there.
For the mother.
But again, right, but who takes that note? What if it had been Valentine's Day? What if it had been a Valentine for the kid? Would the teacher then take it and write fat ass on it and return it to the mother? I mean, that's what we're talking about here.
But do we live in a time now where you can't even... Because they say obesity now has passed smoking in what costs the taxpayers
sure.
of the United States money when it comes to treating diseases and people who are sick. Obviously, this isn't the way to go about it, but...
Well, you got to start somewhere, though.
If you're in a store, if you're walking around here, if you're in a store in Metairie or you're in St. Tammany Parish or you're wherever... And you see a young child who is very overweight.
Right. Perusing up and down the snack aisle.
With a parent. You know, there was a time in our country, where you could say, is everything okay? But
you could say that. You could say, hey, Tubby, a carrot or two.
Yeah, you can't. You can't do that. And this mother obviously very upset. Her name is Francesca Edson. She's the mother of the 5-year-old boy, and she said she was in absolute shock when she got that note back. No. Put him on a diet and go away. The bottom of her note she wrote.
The go away part is like, that's like kicking someone when they're down. You've already knocked them down. Now you're going to kick them.
Interesting. That was at the Rocking Horse Daycare in Texas that happened at.
Like, well, the horse did rock, but the fat kid got on it and broke it. Now it's the broken Rocking Horse Daycare.
Coming up next is the dumbest thing I read.
That wasn't
all
it?
Morning. No, that wasn't it. That's coming up
right.
Next here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlund Morning Show. Boy, Monday mornings feel so much better when the Saints and LSU win, don't they? What a difference. You pop out of bed a little bit quicker. You smile a little bit quicker. More on the Saints coming up. Since it's almost 8:35 this morning, this is where we tell you the dumbest thing I read all morning. And this is actually a follow-up. We talked about this story when it happened, and we have an update on it. Back in May, we did the story about how in Indianapolis, Indiana, there was some sort of big conference for all of the judges in the state of Indiana. And so they went to Indianapolis. Three judges ended up getting arrested because there was a shooting they were involved in a parking lot of a White Castle hamburger place in Indianapolis. And now we have an update on that story.
All right.
Judges involved in shooting at Indiana White Castle suspended without pay. Now remember, these are judges. They were in Indianapolis, like I said, because they were having some big conference with judges. So they wanted all the judges in the state of Indiana to be there for this conference in Indianapolis. That's why they were there. These three judges, two male judges and a female judge, they went to a strip joint. And the reason why I said strip joint loud is because one of the judges, Sabrina Bell, is a woman. So she's with these two male judges, Andrew Adams and Bradley Jacobs. And they're there for this judges conference in Indianapolis, but they were looking for something to do at night. And they went to a strip joint, these two male judges with this female judge. After the strip joint, they were hungry. They wanted to get something to eat. So they ended up going to the White Castle hamburger place in Indianapolis. And that's when something happened in the parking lot. The judges, the three judges waited outside in the parking lot. Now this is late at night, remember?
Right.
They waited in the parking lot while a fourth member of their party, not a judge, went in to the White Castle.
Which is unusual because I can tell you that 24-hour establishments in Indianapolis like that are generally closed. They want you to use the drive-through only.
And let me explain real quick. They were drinking at a bar most of the night.
Right.
They then decided to go to a strip club.
Which was closed, actually.
The strip club was closed, but I still think that's a pretty cool female judge that the judge in Indiana, Sabrina Bell, would go to the strip joint with these two male judges who she was with.
Well, she's a fun-loving gal. It gets even better.
But anyway, the strip joint was closed, so that's why they went to the White Castle hamburger place.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the parking lot. It's 3:15 in the morning. And then the three judges decided to wait in the parking lot. They were with one other guy, not a judge. He went in to the White Castle. So In that parking lot at 3:15 in the morning, two men drive by in a car and they shouted something out the window, to which the female judge flipped them the bird.
Yes.
She gave them the middle finger.
She said, "You're number one."
And you got to be careful when it's 3:15 in the morning and you're in a city and you're in a parking lot of a White Castle.
And that happens to be Indianapolis, but it can be anywhere. It could be here.
But a car, you don't know who's in the car, drives by you. And they shout something out the window at you, and they honk their horn at you.
Just ignore it.
You should probably just let it go.
Yeah.
But the female judge, hey, she wanted to go to the strip joint, too. So you know she's got some chutzpah in her. She gave the finger to the car. So the men pulled into the parking lot. They got out, which led to a heated verbal altercation. All the participants, the three judges, yelling, using profanity. And they're making all kinds of gestures. The confrontation ended when one of the men from the car pulled a gun and shot one of the judges once, shot one of the male judges once,
right.
Shot the other male judge twice.
Right.
And then they took off. They were later captured,
right.
The shooters.
The one who got the one shot was in the stomach. The one who got two shots got them in the chest.
But both men underwent emergency surgery. They were hospitalized for several days, but mm-hmm. they both survived. Well, again, that happened in May, and I remember talking about that story when that happened. I said,
it made me hungry. I love White Castle.
Is this how judges behave late at night? And come to find out, now they got their punishment. They all got suspended without pay. And that would be something to...
Well, they get benched. The judges were benched.
When they get back to the bench, that'll be something. And I bet you this woman, Sabrina Bell, this female judge, is something, hanging out with the male judges, wanting to go to the strip joint, but it was closed. And then she's the one who gave the finger to the strangers in the parking lot that ended up getting her two male judges shot.
Maybe next year, 2020, they'll have the conference here in New Orleans, and we'll go hang with her.
Mm.
Not at 3 a.m., though, because... Makes for a short night.
Well, once their suspension...
I get up at 4.
Once their suspension ends, I guess there's still going to be judges.
Let's look that up, though. Let's see when that conference, where it is for 2020. Maybe it will be here.
But how about that one female judge hanging with the male judges? She's the one that gave the finger, and the two male guys got shot. How about that? Well, that's the dumbest thing I read all morning.
I believe you.
Here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7. New Orleans only classic rock. So if the holidays are around the corner and people are going to be doing a lot of traveling, there are police departments that are warning people, if you're traveling, be careful. They're actually saying, do not use public USB charging stations at airports and other public locations. This is where people can charge their cell phones, whether they're in an airport, they're in a restaurant someplace. There are police departments saying, do not do it. The Los Angeles County District Attorney is telling people, avoid using public USB charging stations at airports and other locations. What happens is criminals, they can load malware onto charging stations or cables that they leave there at the airport, and then someone will come in and they'll see a cable and they'll plug it in.
We've had that before.
I know.
And it's not true. I'm telling you it's not true. There is nothing stored within a cable that you could then pick up and add to your phone. It doesn't happen.
Well, the Los Angeles County District Attorney's office will disagree with you.
I don't care.
They say avoid using public USB charging stations at airports and other locations.
It's called
juice jacking.
I would avoid using them because, like most things in public in an airport, they probably contain fecal matter. That's probably the biggest danger.
Well, that's another
here.
Reason why you shouldn't do
well,
it.
Well, that's more important.
But evidently, people in airports and other public places, they see a place where they can charge their cell phone. This is what a guy named Luke Sizak, he's the Los Angeles County Deputy District Attorney, says. Criminals load malware onto charging stations or cables. so they can load it into the charging station or the cables, and they'll leave the cable at the kiosk where then somebody else will come in and plug in.
The cable itself cannot be... It's like a water hose with nothing attached to either end. It might have a little bit of water in it, but that's not how cables work. That's not how look, we've been working together more than almost 10 years.
Yeah.
All right, who are you going to believe, your buddy, or are you going to believe something you read on the internet? And I don't care if it says citizen's arrest, police alert, police blotter. I don't care what it says.
Well, normally
can't happen.
Normally, I'd agree with you, but this is the Deputy District Attorney of Los Angeles County telling us this.
Misinformation, fake news. Listen to your buddy Brewster. Don't believe it.
Okay. Well, or be careful out there. You can go either way on this one.
And wash your hands. Dear God.
By the way, how's everything going at our new airport?
I haven't been there.
Someone flew out this morning. They said the lines are still a little bit long. I hope they get everything fixed by Ththanksgiving. You spend $1.3 billion on a new airport terminal. You can't have people waiting around for an hour or 2 hours to get in or out of that place like they are now. Coming up next, it's our commercial free ride and a good day for the Saints. That's next on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. We've got a new segment on this show. And if you want us to help you, we can. Because we work at a radio station and we know some people, we can make some phone calls. If there's something going on in your life that you could use a hand with, our segment is called Dear John. And you go to our website at bayou957.com and you click on the Dear John icon. And then if there's something you need a hand with, we can help out if you have.
What is this we? This is,
well,
Dear John.
Or me.
This is not. Yeah, it's you. It's all you.
You want to ask a question about something going on in your life?
If
about,
you need,
about this radio show, this radio station, whatever the case may be, we can help.
About John's haircut. I mean, anything that you want to have a question about the show that relates to him and not me.
Yeah. Just click on, go to our website, bayou957.com. Click on the Dear John icon. Send it to us, and if it's good, we'll read it on the air, and hopefully we can all help each other out.
Oster logic. That's what you will hope to dispense during Dear John.
Hey, real quick, did you see this? This father in Massachusetts got arrested after his 5-year-old son took heroin to school. And then he bragged about how it makes him feel like Spider-Man.
Well,
5-year-old.
Think about it.
A father in the People's Republic of Massachusetts... I used to work there, live there, is facing criminal charges after his 5-year-old son brought smack to school, heroin, dirt, Shanghai Sally, yam yam. Just one taste. And then he said tasting it made him feel like Spider-Man. The father, Benny Garcia, got himself arrested because of that. But his son, his 5-year-old, took a bag of smack to kindergarten last Thursday. And he put some of the powder in his mouth. The boy told the teacher he got it from his living room. This is a unique...
Oh, he ratted his dad out.
This
nice.
This is a unique version of show and tell.
Yes.
This is the type of show and tell that gets parents put in prison.
Well, think about it, though. Spidey sense, smack, they're not that far apart.
The boy told his teacher he got it from his living room, and he said eating the powder turns him into the superhero whose image was stamped on the plastic bag. I guess that's what some people do. I don't do heroin, but I guess if you buy heroin, they'll label it different ways. This happened to be labeled with Spider-Man's picture on it, and of course the 5-year-old kid is going to be drawn to it.
Right. Falls into the hands of children.
The father deserves a smack. And I'm sure you know that Kirk Hammett, who he replaced in Metallica, Dave Mustaine, who went on to form Megadeth. And it's incredible when you look at Dave Mustaine. I mean, how he gets kicked out of a band that went on to become the biggest metal band in history. And he was able to still make it on his own and his band Megadeth. I mean, they weren't never as big as Metallica, but the fact that he still made it.
Right. Looking like Opie. Opie Taylor with long red hair.
Yeah, most people don't make it once, let alone twice. Well, that's just about going to do it for our show today. Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate it. Ginty is next. Ginty! He's got your music notes at noon. We'll chat again tomorrow morning here on Bayou 95.7.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.